Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
They caught all the wild children and put them in zoos. They made them do sums and wear sensible shoes. They put them to bed at the wrong time of day and made them sit still when they wanted to play. They scrubbed them with soap and made them eat peas. And they made them behave and say pardon and please. They took all their wisdom and wilderness away. That's why there are none in the forest today. The best things in life are wild and free. When camping, nature becomes a sacred space where witches can discover their true essence, embrace their passions and awaken their intuition. Witchy camping combines the joy of camping with the rich tapestry of spiritual practices found in witchcraft and nature-based practices. It fosters a sense of community, and it deepens the connection with nature and allows us to explore and embrace our wild selves. Through rituals, meditation, immersive experience in the great outdoors, witchy campers can find harmony, balance, and a profound sense of belonging to the earth and the spiritual realm. Welcome, witches and beautiful souls. You are listening to the Bell Witch Podcast, episode 9, which is quite exciting. We're nearly in double figures, so the next one should be quite special, being the 10th episode. We've got Jodie back, so the Bell Witches are together again. That's me, Swales, the friendly green witch, Jodie Jones of Mother Serpentine Tarot. In this episode, we are going to talk about how amazing camping is, like the essence of camping, our kind of camps, witchy camping, the people that you meet there, tips on having a good night's sleep, right down to when camping sucks. So if you are new to camping or you've been camping a long time, but you want to get into witchy camping, this is going to be the episode for you. So I hope you enjoy it. There's been a lot going on since we last recorded. We've both been away doing stuff. Jodie speaks about going to a medieval festival as a guest rather than as a tarot reader. And I speak about the sustainability show that I attended in Manchester. We do the usual check-ins and shout outs. So yeah, enjoy. I hope you like the poem that I just opened with. This poem me and Jodie heard at a camp we went to last year for an opening ritual, and we thought it quite true and connects to what we talk about in our podcast. The poem was by Janine Willis. Have a look if you're interested. It's quite a cool poem. And then also I read out the spiel, which we seem to have lost a little bit, but Jodie wrote one and I figured I should read it out for you. So yeah, sit back and enjoy. There we are now then. We're back for another episode and I've got Jodie back with me.
Hello.
Our little hiatus last episode. Yeah, welcome back. Yeah. We missed you. Everybody missed you.
Well, on that note, I may as well plunge into my witchy week, because I guess some people may have been wondering why I've been on hiatus, and I have done a lengthy post about it on Instagram, but I've been having some fertility-related health issues, so it means that I've been really, really paring back from all my work, really, my tarot readings, my classes, and just focusing on healing, nourishing myself and connecting with myself through this difficult time.
Self-care is important, isn't it? You've got to look after yourself.
Yeah, there's actually a tarot card for that, for anybody wondering. The Four of Swords is a card. And basically It's a card that warns of an enforced rest. And what that means is illness or injury. But what it says that you can do is take time out, resting, reflecting, recuperating and meditating. And then, you know, hopefully avoid this illness, injury or accident that will be the universe's way of kind of kicking you down and making you rest and reflect and recuperate.
I know this car will, because like when I broke my leg a few years ago, I would get in the Four of Swords lots.
Yeah.
And I'm ignoring it, rushing around with a baby in the sling. Ended up falling down a grassy hill with her in the sling and breaking my ankle really bad. And it took me 7 months to recover from it, from things going wrong. So it was definitely the universe saying, like, if you're not going to sit down, I'm going to bloody make you sit down.
Yeah.
7 months.
Yeah. So for me, my intention has been to sort of stay home, focus on private magical workings and also emotional healing, just given everything that's been kicking off. And that said, I did manage to get out this weekend and go camping with my family at Tewkesbury Medieval Festival, which is the largest medieval festival in Europe, which probably really means the world, because like all the medieval stuff, you know, is all based on what happened in Europe, isn't it? So the Tewkesbury Medieval Festival takes place at the site of the battle at Tewkesbury that was part of the War of the Roses. I got to briefly meet my idol, Ronald Hutton, who I've been wanting to meet for a long time. And every event that Ronald Hutton does, I'm like, oh, Ronald Hutton's there. Can I go? Can I go to this? Can I get childcare for this? Ronald Hutton's there.
I don't know who he is.
Right. So Ronald Hutton is an academic historian who writes about pagan times, pagan people. And he has an amazing book called Queens of the Wild.
I bet I've got some books by him and I don't even realise.
Queens of the Wild, Pagan Goddesses in Christian Europe, an Investigation. I mean, he's just a renowned scholar and all his works are incredibly researched, and he's kind of like the font of all knowledge on pagan history, and he's quite the celebrity in both the history sort of scene as well as the pagan scene. So he's speaking at Witchfest. He speaks a lot about witchcraft at like universities and conferences, and if there's a pagan event, they are like bound to want Ronald Hutton there. So you've got good chances of meeting him or seeing him talk at conferences around the UK. My eldest, who is now non-binary, previously they were called Eartha, now they're called Neptune for anyone that's struggling to keep up. So Neptune went up to Ronald Hutton to get his autograph for me. And when Ronald Hutton asked what name to put on the autograph, Neptune said, Cornholius Penguin Bottom Weasley. And I just died inside. I just died.
Brilliant.
I was mortified.
You'll remember them, though.
Cornholius. I would rather be forgotten. Yeah. And I was like, just put Neptune.
just put Neptune. Cool name, though. I do like Neptune.
It's just another planet, as they say.
Another planet.
It was Earth, then now it's Neptune. Both planets. Can't complain. The medieval festival was absolutely incredible in many ways because, as you guys likely know, there is a lot of crossover between paganism and pagan interests and like history and LARP and historical dress. There were the most incredible stalls. I got a cauldron on a tripod, you know, to cook over the open fire while we're camping in future. And yeah, the stalls were amazing. They had the most beautiful fortune teller tent, and she was really, really nice, was the fortune teller, and she only does a couple of camps a year, and she doesn't have like a name or social media or anything to find her by, but she had the most midnight blue reenactors tent, you know, so it was literally like a proper medieval tent and it was midnight blue. She had a shield that had been hand painted in like starry sky blue with like tarot cards on it to like advertise her, and her chair was like upholstered fabric with like little stars on it, like it was all blue with stars on it. It was beautiful, and she was really, really friendly as well and just really, really knowledgeable, and she'd been reading for a long, long time, so it was really, really nice to meet her.
Did you get a reading from her?
I didn't, because it was raining. It was really, really dreadful weather, and also, yeah, I get so many readings that I'm always, I don't want to say reluctant. I mean, in my line of work, you've got to think, because I teach people, a lot of people practice on me. So I get a lot of readings and I can do them for myself. So
oh, yeah.
I don't usually go do them. Yeah, I went up and met her and had a good chin wag and looked at all the cards.
I was sad that I wasn't there. Yeah. Sound really good. It's every year though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it's free. It's completely free. Camping was, I think, £20 for the weekend. So we took Gertrude, our big rainbow tent. She's named after Winter's great-great-grandma, who was born weighing a stone. And then from all the photos, seems to be about over 6 foot and probably about £300 from what I've heard. So yeah, a giantess. But yeah, so we took Gertrude and it was just an absolute blast. Really, really lovely. Really lovely people. All the stall holders were really, really friendly. And it was nice to be camping somewhere like that, you know, a big event like that, and it not being for work. Because I think I'm like in the trap at the moment where I go to so many cool events, but I'm sat at a tarot table with this. It was just able to be an active participant with no role.
Nice to see it from the other side. We'll have to try and get Gertrude and Delilah together at some point, which is my tent.
Delilah,
because she's delightful. So yeah. I have been doing inspirational stuff since the last episode. This weekend I went to the sustainability show in Manchester. I think it's quite a new show. It's in London usually, and I think this was the first one up in the north. Could be wrong, but it was smaller than I thought, although the people that were there were pretty cool. The products were very mindful and eco-friendly. My washing powder people were there, small, that I absolutely adore. And that's the reason why I knew about it, because they mentioned they were going small washing powder. But I went to some talks that really inspired me. One was a guy called Jarvis Smith of the My Green Pod website, and he's a shamanic thought leader, although he hates the title thought leader, because he was saying he rules with his heart and not his head, which is really sweet. But I think his website is all about connecting people and helping people look after the earth and being mindful of your stuff. And he was doing a talk about being mindful for the earth, where he was telling his story and he got us all to meditate, but you could tell half of the crowd were just really confused and a bit like, what am I listening to? This is a bit weird. But half of us were obviously quite witchy and pagan, I thought, and we're loving it. But yeah, it was just saying, well, everything that you own has come from the earth, even your laptop, the plastics and your spray cans and your shoes and your wardrobe and your car, all them materials came from the earth. And so be mindful about it and take a moment just to do a bit of earth healing and imagining that you've got roots on your feet and all that kind of stuff. It was really cool. And then somebody else who stood out to me was Jason Williams from Cloud Gardener. So this dude, he's just got famous really quick. He did a garden through lockdown in 2020 on his 18th floor balcony. And it took off. He learnt loads about gardening and getting insects to come to his flowers on the 18th floor. And he's even got a fish pond in there. He's proper inspirational. He was doing talks about how to propagate and do tiny fish ponds on your balcony and giving out free seeds and stuff. And he entered Chelsea Flower Show competition and he came second, which is just phenomenal, you know, because he's so new to it all. It just inspired me to get some fish in the garden, plants that are edible. It were growing edible pond plants. I left the show feeling really inspired and not so down in the dumps about the future of the earth and pollution and all that. It's nice.
I tell you what, while in Tewkesbury, we were talking about a book. It was written by one of my good friends is a lecturer at the university in Leeds, and it was by his friend and he recommended it to me. It's called Human Planet: How We Created the Anthropocene. So I read it and it's basically it talks about the Anthropocene. What that means is like when it's like the period in Earth's history when humans started to kind of really, really take over, and where the earth became like human centered and where we began to impact on like the climate, the ecosystems, when things like concrete began to spread. And we were talking about it, and it was actually 1600 is like the date that's given for like when humans had actually basically gone past a certain point and where we entered what they called the Anthropocene.
Wow.
So it's quite recent in human history, really, isn't it? So yeah. Like we'd always had an impact, but lived in somewhat harmony with everything else. I think a lot of it's just to do with in industrialization, concrete, building streets.
It's just mad. Yeah, it blows my mind. I remember watching that Sandman on Netflix, and there were this thing where every 100 years, did you see it, where he had to meet this guy every 100 years, and each scene was very similar to the last scene, you know, like Tudor and tiny little improvements. And then this, I think it was a scene from the 1800 to the 1900 was crazy different, you know, because we'd had the industrial phenomenon happen.
Revolution.
Yeah, we'd had the Industrial Revolution happen. And so, like, it was the 80s, basically. They were just so like, oh my God, really put into perspective the big jump, you know, in 100 years, how much it sped up.
I mean, when you think of how much life has changed, even in our era, when you think, you're only a few years older than me, but I think that age gap is enough that I grew up with a computer in my house, and I'm quite confident that you wouldn't have done.
No, I didn't know. I think with us two, you could tell quite a lot of the age difference, because my upbringing is so technology starved.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a computer, but it was just a big word processor. It didn't have internet. It took me ages to turn it on. It took me ages to boot it down.
So my first computer we got when I was about, I mean, not mine, the family computer, was I was about five. I had access to the internet by the time I was about 8 or 9, and I had like Neopets. But now it's like everyone has their own computer
on the
phone.
It's
like in my house, everyone has their own computer. If I go to my parents, everyone has their own computer and their own phones. Yeah,
you carry a computer around in your pocket, which is astonishing and bizarre in its own way. I always laugh because when I were at school, the maths teachers, you've probably seen the meme, used to go like, "You need to get good at maths because you won't carry a calculator in your pocket everywhere you go."
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, bollocks to you, because I am.
Yeah. But it's not even just that. It's like things like communication, I think, is really, really taken for granted by my generation. I have friends who I tell my deepest secrets that live in America, that live like across, you know, the other side of the planet, that I've never actually met in person. And we tell each other everything. In fact, one of them even live streamed her birth so that we could all be at her birth.
Wow.
Like, which I think is just absolutely amazing. Yeah, and it's expected that you're contactable at all times, isn't it? Or like that you'll phone back within a certain time frame, where like, I guess for our parents, it's like, if you were out, you were out. If someone knocked at your door and you weren't in, that's it. Like, go away. Yeah.
Pixar, it didn't happen.
Yeah. What a time to be alive.
Anyway, let's move on to our chosen topic for the episode, which is going to be all about
witchy camping. So
witchy camping.
Yeah. So this is something that we speak about a lot, and it is the season. Really, summer is when you want to spend 7 weeks in a tent. I think a lot of our listeners maybe already camp or go to festivals, and some of you will hopefully be inspired by this episode to go out and go camping with your children. And it's something that's really, really special to us, and we talk about it a lot, but this is probably the most useful time for us to talk about it.
Yeah, the beginning of the camping season. I think in my personal experience, camping is very Marmite-y. You know, some people absolutely love it and want to do it all the time. Some people are just like, no, I need a hotel bed and some warm running water and a breakfast and stuff. But it's just amazing to be out on the ground and being off the grid and not having to do any jobs or staring at the mess.
And I think it's interesting because you say it's like Marmite. You get what you want out of camping. And this is something that I think a lot of people that think they don't like camping maybe don't understand. It's like last year, I wanted to go to Scarborough for a little holiday. I wanted to spend a couple of days there. And I think winter was maybe only 4 months at the time, maybe 4 months old. We went camping and the tent was just a base for our stuff while we went, you know, in the arcades and on the beach and, you know, all the stuff that you do at a day trip. It almost wasn't even like camping, really. But then I also remember the first time I took Neptune camping, and it was while I was pregnant with Winter. And it was very much like what you think of when you think of camping, you know, putting up a tent and playing, you know, like little board games. But I think what we talk about when we talk about camping is more witchy camping.
So what do we do at witchy camping? Tends to be quite community-based, I think.
Absolutely. And it's just a wonderful way for people to connect with nature and with the wildest version of themselves and with spirit. And that's something you can do on your own or as part of a community.
I do enjoy being with like-minded people. The camps we go to, I can relate a lot to people. And it amazes me people dress up at camping because you've got to take so much stuff. It's one thing I haven't quite achieved yet is taking all the dress-up stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Tend to just rough it a little bit, but it helps having a bell tent that you can put up on your own, because I tend to just go with my two girls, so I needed a tent I could put up solo. And then you end up buying all this amazing stuff to accessorize it. Well, I do anyway. So I've got a little porch now, and then the bunting and the carpet and the the flags. And
yeah,
gets a bit silly.
I mean, I've got a sofa in mine, so I'm not one to talk.
That's like glamping. That's over the hill to glamping.
Yeah, I think even more than your tent, to me, witchy camping's about establishing those deep bonds, and that can be with people, with communities, or just with nature. And yeah, like, just to circle back to the fact that camping can be what you want it to be. I suppose in terms of witchy camping, there are probably three main ways that you could do that. One would be to go, four main ways. One would be to go to something big like a festival where you might have spiritual experiences. There might be music there, or, you know, often there are spiritual activities. And, you know, the sort of smaller scale of that would be to find camp communities. So myself and Swales are part of a few pagan camp communities specifically, which tend to be quite private. And though they have some stalls and some music and some activities, it's very much, rather than being like a festival, it's about honing that sort of community spirit and connecting with like-minded people. Then you can camp as small groups, you know, you and your friends, you and your family, you and your own little pod, you know, maybe setting an intention and going out camping to connect over that intention, whether that's like to spend a few days in retreat, or to spend a few days connecting with nature, or a few days in ritual, or a mix. But then you can also go camping by yourself. I think it's absolutely lovely to go just on your own in your own little tent as well. So like, we go, when I say on your own, what I mean is without people outside of your family group. Like, you can just take yourself on your own, or go with your family and enjoy it, and enjoy time out in nature, or at an event or what have you.
Oh, you can actually just go on your own. I have done that in the past, where just me and my tent have gone somewhere.
Yeah.
I used to do it for work when I used to be a jewellery designer. Instead of paying hotels, I used to camp and just go to my stall. But I loved it. I remember getting somewhere, finding a campsite, and then I rocked up and it were empty. And the guy said to me, oh, we're not officially open anymore. But I just thought, because you're working in the town, I'll let you camp here, which was proper dodgy at the time when I think about it, because nobody knew where I was. But I ended up camping next to a little stream, and the sheep were coming right up close up to my tent because I was the only tent there. They were roaming, and it was just lovely just to open your eyes and hear the stream rushing past, and then hearing the sheep outside my door eating the grass next to my tent. It was amazing, actually. It's probably one of the best camping experiences I ever had. But at the time, it was a few years ago now, so I didn't have a posh phone which tracks you. I remember my husband going like, I've no idea where you are. You didn't tell me where you were.
Yeah. And I think this is something that I'd love to do, but at the same time, I feel quite cautious, which is why I like going with my family unit. Is it's like, you know, this weekend when we were at Tewkesbury, the spot was beautiful, really, really nice, you know, in the trees, but it was just relaxing to be there. I would like to be able to relax on my own, but at the same time, I would always be wary of people. And I think if you're on a campsite with people, you're scared. Like, for me as an anxious person, I am like anxious about what those people might do. Might they rob me? Might they harm me in some way? But then if I'm on my own, I'm like, now there's nobody around to stop me from getting Mad Axe murdered. And maybe I've just listened to too much My Favourite Murder. But
you have, yeah. It is a bit scary.
Yeah, but you've got to think about these things. One of the places, if you did want to go on your own or in like a small group, or with just your family, and experience this sort of deeply relaxing connection with nature style of camping, then Nearly Wild camping seems really, really good. We have like a communal membership to Nearly Wild Camping, which is essentially, it was built as a way for people to connect, campers with beautiful wild spaces, but that were owned, because obviously just camping out on your own is, I guess, technically illegal.
Yeah, it's a not lot in of this people country. Do it. We can't do it, can we?
Yeah, a lot of people do it in this country. There are a lot of people who do wild camping, but Nearly Wild Camping is a way of having all the positives of wild camping, but without any legal repercussions, farmers shooting at you or anything.
Yeah. But they've got like levels, aren't they? They've got these little fires. It's like five fires is basically a wood with no running water to drink from a tap, no standpipe and no toilet and no car access. You know, that is like the most wild that's listed on there. I tend to go for maybe three or four flames. That's like there is a compost toilet and a standpipe. That's all I need, really. I don't need much else. But some people like the showers, so you'd probably be one or two flames.
I don't shower when I can.
I don't either.
I think it's like a neurodivergent thing. Like, I don't like showering anyway. It's just a sensory hell for me. And and it's a chore, and it's like it takes up loads of time out of your day where I'd rather be doing other things. So for me, I just don't bother when I'm camping.
Depends on how long you're camping for, though, surely.
But I don't sweat. I'm like Prince Andrew.
Oh.
I don't sweat. None of my family do.
Yeah, if I'm doing 3 nights, then I don't. But if I'm doing more than 3 nights, then I have to, because I just can't stand it when I wake up and you're all... It's funny because you have that hot and cold thing, don't you, where you're sweaty from being in your sleeping bag all night. And then it's also cold. So it's like a weird hot-cold thing you get when you camp, depending on the season you go in. But yeah, oh God, I love camping. Just talking about it is making me want to go out there. When yeah. I camp, what do we do when we camp then? So when I camp with my girls, try and do nature-based activities. There's a lot. I've got a book called Camping with Kids by Simon McGough, and it's hundreds of fun things to do with kids. It's actually a really cool book, and it's lists of different things and things you can cook and activities out there. There's a really good one I like called the Matchbox Challenge, where you give your kids a matchbox and tell them to go find something that'll fit in it, you know, that's really unusual, and treasure hunting. It feels like it's from the 60s or something, but we do that. We've done that one in the past, and they come back with really cool pebbles or tiny little flowers and arrange a little flower garden in this matchbox. It's really cute. Yeah, we take a bag full of crafty stuff, just old magazines and glue, paper. My two like to just stay in the tent, cutting and pasting, sticking and making crowns. And we do that for a long time in the tent, like their little den.
I think there is absolutely loads to do when you're camping, particularly with children. There are loads and loads of ways of connecting with nature with children. But I think specifically thinking about witchcraft, there are loads of ways to include that in your camp, whether that's sharing rituals or sharing stories around a campfire, group meditations, communal meals are a really, really lovely thing to share, and can do things like grounding exercises, energy work, divination, spell casting, communing with deities or spirits, but also things like foraging. You know, we in our last episode together, we spoke with Lisa Cutcliffe from Edulis Wild Foods all about foraging, and I think that would be something lovely to do while camping, is to go on a nature walk and begin identifying different plant species.
I'm going to say, have you heard of Journey Tea?
No.
It's pretty cool. So you'd get a big flask of hot water and go on a foraging journey, picking stuff that you know is all right to eat, obviously, that you like the look of or you like the smell of, and then you put it in the flask as you go, and then at the end of your walk you've got this amazing tea that you've made. It's yeah. really cool. I love the idea. One of my witchy friends told me about it a few weeks back, Journey yeah. Tea, and she was saying she's done it a few times and she's only ever had a gross brew once out of all the time she's done it.
Aww.
So I was like, such a lovely idea, Journey in Tea.
Yeah, I think foraging would be lovely. And obviously identifying things like plants, even like if you don't want to pick and eat them, I think just looking for them, observing them, thinking, oh, what's that, and sort of identifying it is very, very fun. It's kind of like a treasure hunt. But as well, birds, because you get different birds in different areas of Britain. So I think, like, I always like when I'm like, oh, I've never seen one of those before.
Chiff-chaffs, chiff-chaff, chiff-chaff. Oh, that's a chiff-chaff because it says its name.
I think just walking in general, specifically if you're camping somewhere where there's something sacred nearby, which may be a consideration for a lot of witches when they're picking a location for camping, is there a sacred well or site nearby? I mean, in Yorkshire, we have many beautiful and sacred places to go, and it's really, really good to get a feel for what is in the local area that you can maybe go visit. Is there a stream where you can go collect sacred waters? Is there spaces in Britain where I've seen people share online where they actually go and pick quartz just out of the earth? And, you know, I think just looking around and thinking, what's nearby? Where might you go? What can you do that's maybe part of your own practice? I think is a really, really lovely way to spend a day while camping, and it kind of adds an intention to it for you.
Singing around the fire is amazing. Having a fire when you camp is an absolute game changer.
Yeah, and chanting and drum journeying and dancing around a fire. There's literally nothing like it. Like, there's nothing like dancing around a fire.
Cooking on the fire, marshmallows is a good one.
Yeah.
A little marshmallow.
Communal fire in general, I think, is really, really special. And there are loads of ways that you can incorporate rituals into communal fires. Last year when we did Pan's Camp, which is our own private camp that's part of the wider Bellwitch Project, which is our little private camping community, we burned pine cones, do you remember, with little spell scrolls in them? Yeah, and we spun yarn into colourful strings and then made them into witch ladders around the fire, and people took turns to sing and read poems, and it was just a really, really special night. And I think there's just, it really, really fosters a sense of community and deepens your connection with others, but also with your wild self.
I think it changes the landscape of the day. Days are a lot longer because you're outside the whole time, especially in the summer, and it'll feel like it's 7 o'clock and it'll be nearly 11 o'clock at night, which I really love. You could do a bit of stargazing and take your time. I just love that there's nothing that's required other than setting up a camp and then cooking a bit of beans on the flame and then setting down a camp. There's nothing immediately you have to do chore-wise. I think that's probably the biggest pull of camping for me.
And I think it releases emotional burdens as well. Like, as well as just helping you put them on pause and like escaping them, I think it helps release them. You often feel like you've hit reset emotionally after a really, really good camp.
So when does camping suck?
Honestly, this is one of those things where it varies from person to person, and I'm actually going to go out on a limb here and I'm going to say there are always comforts that may not be met while camping. That's something that you need to plan for during camping. So it's no good saying, oh, camping sucks, because it might be too cold or it might be too wet, the bed might not be comfortable or the ground might not be comfortable. Those are all things that you can prepare for in advance, and you will observe this if you go out with experienced campers, that while some people will sit and shiver on the ground in a sleeping bag, I'm on literally, you know, like the IKEA fold out futon beds. It's like it's a sofa that folds into a bed. It's not from IKEA, it's from Argos, sorry. So it's literally, it's a sofa by day and it's a bed by night, and I can't feel the earth beneath me at all. And I always have my own duvet, my own pillows, I have a hot water bottle in case it gets cold. So it's one of those things where like you can prepare for any eventuality beforehand, but then sometimes it sucks. Because either you're not with the right people or you're not in the right place, I think is the main concern for me. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think everybody needs to consider, is when to say no, when to say I'm not putting myself through this one. Earlier this year, you may remember, I was meant to read tarot at Beltane at Thornborough. The weather was supposed to be really, really bad and my dog was in heat, and I was just dreading for days on end, dreading this weekend in the rain, knowing that I'd have my kids needing to be in the tent and that they'd be like, you know, cold and wet and unable to enjoy it, and also that we'd be stuck in with like a dog that was in season, which, you know, might have meant other dogs might have been coming after us or like not leaving us alone, might have meant, you know, it gets quite messy, you know, in terms of like your camping beds and your camping equipment and your tent. Nobody wants a tent that's got dog blood all over it, do they?
Nice.
Sorry for the visceral image. But, you know, for me, I was like, I am not putting myself through that. And even though I would love to camp, I've got to say no to this one. For me personally, anything where I just have a sense that the people there are just going to be knobheads is not for me. And that sounds awful, but I'm just like, if I've got 6 weeks in which I can camp, I do not want to waste one of those weeks camping with people that I don't fit in with.
But yeah, look for your tribe. And that's why we do as witchy communal camping. I think the year before we started camping, I actually did some of this camping with people that weren't my people, you know, and it was not a great experience. But you learn from it, don't you? I mean, you learn from experience, and the more you go out doing it, the more you'll understand. Game changers camping for me. The hot water bottle is an absolute game changer. Take your hot water bottle
when I'm camping.
Keep you warm at night. Keep your kids warm at night. Also, recently I got a tri-frame for my Delilah Bell tent. So that gets rid of the middle pole and frames the tent 3 points on the inside. So it means you've got a whole space inside. For a 3 meter, it makes a really big difference. So that means I can lay, me and my two kids can lay vertically side by side. And when we get cold, we can cuddle up in a big double, which is just an absolute life changer for me, because before we were kind of going in a little triangle shape around the pole, and I was desperately trying to snuggle up to my youngest to keep warm.
See, we're only in a four meter, and we've not had that problem. But also, I would say co-sleeping if you've got children, while camping is absolutely a must.
It is a must, yeah,
to keep them warm. That said, Winter, who's my baby, and so with Neptune, I co-slept with them from birth. This is probably off on a bit of a tangent. I bed shared with Winter, with Neptune from birth. Absolutely loved it. And even nowadays, they'll still get in my bed sometimes. And then nine. And I absolutely love and cherish my nights with Neptune in my bed. With Neptune, I think the difference is I'd have woken up. I never would have rolled on her. My instincts were like on point. Where with Winter, because she had such a difficult birth, because when she was born, I had COVID and I had a fever, and I didn't get to meet her for like 4 hours after she was born. I was so exhausted in those days after the birth that co-sleeping wasn't an option. And even nowadays, she'll get in with me in the early hours of the morning and we'll cuddle up together, and I love it, but I would never go a full night with her. Because I just know that I'm not safe to do that with her. I know that my instincts aren't wired up to wake up if I rolled on her, for instance. So I wait till it's like early hours of the morning, where I know that like that's like where I sleep quite lightly. And I would co-sleep with Winter while camping. However, because we've got the way that our beds work, we've got like a few beds sort of side by side, and I'm worried that she could roll into one of the gaps and that I wouldn't wake up. And also, when we were going to co-sleep, when she was first camping, it was just too cold. So I kept her off the ground in her pram. And it's warmer up there, obviously, than being on the ground. So it just feels that bit safer for her. We were on about when camping sucks, weren't we?
Yeah.
So yeah, when you're not with your people, when camping becomes a burden, it sucks. And I think if it's...
And when you forgot your camp chair, that sucks.
Yeah.
I've done that in the past. Forgot my camp chair. Yeah. Where am I going to sit?
And I think it's worth mentioning that there are people that will take substances while camping. And if you're one of those people, that can make camping a really good experience, but can also make it a very negative experience or even dangerous. And if you're not one of those people, you may want to be mindful if those people are around you.
Don't take loads of valuables, because there's absolutely no way you can keep them safe.
Yes.
Leave all the screens at home, all the iPads, and I take my phone and my wallet, and that's it. And I wear a bum bag throughout and just keep them on your person at all time, because there is no security in camping other than the car, I guess, leaving in your car.
Yeah.
Don't give them the opportunity. Mm. All right. So should we do shout outs next?
I'll let you.
For this episode's little shout out that we do, we was thinking of shouting out Witchfest, and they run markets and events throughout the country, I think, isn't it? Up and down in the Midlands and in London. Kind of like a conference. Witchfest in London is a witch conference. Me and Jodie went in 2019, I think it was.
Yeah.
And as the first
COVID
time I'd
stopped us, didn't it, for the next couple of years, yeah.
But it was the first time I'd ever done anything like that, so it was quite a new territory to me. But I remember being amazed at a conference for witches, and medieval babes were singing on the stage, and I met
And Dave the Bard, yeah.
Yeah, I discovered, is it Dan the Bard?
It's Dave, yeah. It's spelled D-A-M-H there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's awesome. If you don't know him, check him out. He's blooming brilliant. Right, nice guy as well. And then you learn stuff. Yeah, they do talks and lectures from witches that have written books, like you say. And then there's tarot readers and astrologers and people who make hats and photo booths and I don't know, what else is there?
There's always like a disco on the night. Yeah.
And it's in November. Yeah. At the end of the year, I think it's the 18th.
I'm reading
of November.
Tarot there. Yeah.
Oh, there we go. There's a plug. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. George's got a tarot table down there, and I'll probably just go just to hang out and be a proper geeky witch and pester her between bookings. I've got a subscription magazine, I think you can sign up to, and you can become. Used to be a membership, but now it's like a donation thing where you get perks for being a subscriber of something. I think they've changed it all since COVID lockdown, but they do a camp as well called Children of
Artemis.
Children of Artemis. I'm so dyslexic.
Artemis.
They're on a camp called Children of... I can't say it, you say it.
They're on a camp called Children of Artemis.
Which I think is in the Midlands somewhere. That's an historic camp that's been going on quite a long time now. And I did book a ticket once and then it got cancelled because of COVID. We should try and go. I think next year they're rebooting it in 24. So it's worth a look. Get your camp on. Meet loads of witches. Learn loads of cool stuff. Buy loads of tarot cards. You want to say the website?
It is witchfest.net.
Witchfest.net. That's simple, isn't it? Have a look.
I'm just looking up the camp.
I don't think there's much on it at the moment. They're doing that whole sort of like, oh, we're planning something. What could it be? And everybody's like, oh, it's camping.
The Artemis Gathering. Children of Artemis. And then the camp's called the Artemis Gathering.
And you can get a membership to be part of the community online. I think they do a lot of online witch fest event, Zoom conferences. It's a good place to find signposting and books you can read and courses you can attend. It's quite a cool little community. So yeah. Matt, if you've just tuned into this episode, if you've just discovered us, we've got a few behind us now, and the last one spoke more about camps I'd attended solo with my kids. Might be worth going back and having a listen. Out to Play festival that happened recently. It was very good.
Let us know if you do go camping. This is something that we get asked about a lot, how you get in these witchy camps, and the answer is you have to discover that on your own. So there are some amazing festivals, and then there's some that are quite private and quite niche and quite secretive, and it's up to you to go seek them out. But let us know which ones appeal to you. Let us know where we can find you. Or
it helps to be vouched for as well. I think the stuff I've gotten into, I just got into my first one, and then people tell you then, do you know what they attend, and then they vouch for you. So it's almost like you need a stepping stone camp to get you into the community, and then that community will supply you with more information and you'll find out what you're drawn to. And but it is a very personal journey, so we don't just want to reel off a list of places you should attend, because I think it's a bit of a cop out, and also it'll mean so much more to you if you discover it yourself.
Lovely meeting you all. See you guys soon.
Bye.
Happy camping.
Before I sign off, I just want to let you know of my recent offerings. I'm working on getting places to offer Reiki around Leeds. I've managed to secure a second venue, which is the Left Bank in Burley Park. It's that really cool old church building that's been taken over as a community art space. I know Jodie does a lot of workshops there, tarot and bone reading. There's amazing events, festivals, music. I've just recently finished the poetry festival there, which was absolutely fantastic. A week of non-stop poetry and workshops. I was there every day, and Saturday I did 12 hours at Left Bank of poetry, so Sunday I was recovering all day. But yeah, it's a brilliant venue, and they've got little caravans outside which they rent out to independent businesses, and I was lucky enough to secure a place offering Reiki in this sweet little cosy caravan out front. And that should be every first Wednesday evening of the month to begin with, so my first one is actually this week, which will be a day after this podcast comes out, which might be a bit short notice, but it is pay on arrival, £20 for 30 minutes from your friendly Greenwich, with crystal healing and crystal grids and a bit of car music and a nice place to just relax with me and have a bit of healing. Yeah, so that's a new adventure. As always, thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate you giving up your time to hear what we've got to say. Me and Jodie feel we are getting better at it and getting the swing of it. Thank you so much for the ratings we've received so far. I think we've got 14 on Spotify. It'd be awesome if we could make it, I'm going to say 50 by the end of the year, would be great. And it really does help spread the word on our small little podcast. And also, yeah, if you could rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts, I'd be eternally grateful to help us. Right, that's it from me. Have a great couple of weeks, and we'll see you next time for episode 10. Bye, witches. Stay magical.